Welcome to Press TV's special coverage of the situation in the Gaza Strip. As we speak, it's just a little over an hour and a half into the ceasefire that has again been declared between Hamas and Israel. This ceasefire, again, is supposed to hold for 72 hours, and Hamas has said it will give time to negotiate properly and achieve the results that the people of the Gaza Strip want, which is the lifting of the blockade. Now, as we discuss what the ceasefire means and what the situation, the humanitarian situation is like on the ground, we are being joined by our correspondent, Halla Assefadi from Gaza. From Washington, D.C., is political commentator Randy Shorten. Joining us from New York is writer and political commentator Nasir Al-Omari. I'd like to thank you all for joining us here on this special edition of Press TV's coverage of the ongoing onslaught on the Gaza Strip as we enter the 72-hour ceasefire. Let me begin with you, Halla. The ceasefire seems to be holding right now, but you brought us pictures coming out of the Al-Shifa hospital where we could just begin to comprehend what the situation is like right now for most of the Gazans. There isn't a single Gazan who hasn't been directly affected by Israel's onslaught.
Well, this is true. As you've seen earlier, pictures of Gazans who are already living a ceasefire that just started an hour and a half ago, but they don't even have a place to go anymore. They chose Al-Shifa Hospital to spend their long nights, hoping they can get a couple of hours of good sleep before the ceasefire is broken. Tens of families are now living in Al-Shifa Hospital. Many of them have started a very small business by selling candy or chocolate for people at Al-Shifa Hospital, especially after they have lost all they have and all their property as well. Life in a ceasefire is totally different in Gaza. It's totally different than this office in Israel, for example. As we have witnessed in the latest 72-hour ceasefire, where a number of Palestinians or hundreds of Palestinians went back to their neighborhoods to try to find and to try to figure out if their homes are still standing or not. Many Gazans have spent their 72-hour ceasefire by visiting their loved ones in the hospital. Usually during the war, only one person can stay with people who are injured. But in a ceasefire, the entire family got the chance to check on their relative. A ceasefire in Gaza has totally different meanings than the one in Israel, as we have seen pictures coming out of Israel in the latest ceasefire, where Israelis actually spend their ceasefire on beaches, in restaurants, and in malls, those things that do not even exist anymore in Gaza or do not even exist in the first place in Gaza. Fishermen usually make a good use of this ceasefire, as they insist on working on their industry. So basically, tomorrow morning we'll be seeing more fishermen fishing in order to keep on their livelihoods or to keep on bringing some food or some money to their houses. But what is sad that they actually fish right next to the beach. They cannot even go further. A ceasefire also means in Gaza that people can just get some time to comprehend and understand the entire misery that they have been living and the entire stories they have been hearing. Being in Gaza in a ceasefire is a chance of knowing that if you're still alive and you're still talking, then you should thank God a million times, because others are totally traumatized and cannot even do what you're doing.
All right, Halla, stay with us there. Let me cross over to Randy Short. He's joining us from D.C. and he's a political commentator. Dr. Short, thank you very much for joining us here on Press TV. You just heard our correspondent just outline the very basics of what a ceasefire would mean for an ordinary Gazan right now on the ground there in the coastal enclave. It is a humanitarian disaster, to say the least, and it is appalling how the international community has responded. The failure of the UN, the failure of world powers to speak up for the Palestinian population in the Gaza Strip is very telling. Wouldn't you agree?
I would agree, absolutely. I would agree.
How do you interpret it, though?
I see it in a larger context, that the plight of the Palestinians in Gaza who've been suffering for 66 years is very much connected to a chain of events, whether they're genocides or oppression or suppression of human rights, whether it's West Papua, whether it's Libya, whether it is what's going on in Syria. There is a global onslaught against certain kinds of people, and a formula for fighting back may require more than one prong to the attack. The Achilles heel of this entire problem is that is the United States and its global and domestic problem of its refusal to comply with human rights conventions and standards. The Achilles heel is yet another group of oppressed people, whether it's the African Americans here, whether it's Puerto Ricans here, whether it's Native Americans here. America's the big bully brother to its junior bully, Israel. Going after Israel in and of itself for its human rights violations is just the start. I mean, if you had two guys and you were fighting them, one was a big tough guy and then you had a small guy who was tough, it'd make more sense to take a lead pipe to the big bully and knock him down to make a point. The United States is the drag on the UN. It's its allies are the major powers that refuse to say what's happening to Gaza. So more intelligently, it would make sense to call the United States out. This has happened. This happened in 1989 when the Chinese were trying to change their trade status with the United States. They threatened to talk about the condition of my people, the African Americans or African Amerindians in the United States. And it forced this country, which is a human rights violator writ large, to change its trading policy with China. This should be done again, because we have to make this problem of the Gazan people a problem for everyone. Everyone should be as angry and upset and demanding an immediate ceasefire, an immediate end of the blockade, an immediate bringing to justice the ICC, the Indeed. Leadership of the Likud and anyone else, as well as Americans. That's what's got to happen. It can't be piecemeal.
Hold that thought,
it has
Mr.
to be a
Mr. Short, hold that thought. Let me bring in Mr. Nasir
this.
Al-Omari. He's a writer and political commentator and joins us from New York. Mr. Al-Omari, as Mr. Short pointed out, there needs to be an ocean of people demanding a ceasefire, demanding that Israel be brought to justice, demanding that institutions like the UN actually serve for the preservation of human rights and uphold international law. We've seen these protests now take place. There is a global awakening and understanding of the situation. We've seen protests as far away as Berlin, South Korea, Japan. They've taken place in places that we never heard of before, and it is seen as an unprecedented thing. What do you make of it?
Well, I believe that the world, for the first time, has understood what the Netanyahu government and his gang really stand for in Tel Aviv. There was a time when people believed the lies that the Netanyahu government and his gang were telling the world about Israel being under attack. When people looked at the children being torn apart for no good reason other than collectively punishing the Palestinians for standing up and asking for their right to be human beings, to do what you and I do every day, which is to have a family and go to work and go fish and travel. When people saw all of this, I think it changed all of us. It definitely changed me, because I was at some point, I believed that the Netanyahu government could be brought about to a peace process. I no longer believe that. I really believe that this is a colonial government, that it tries to kick out the Palestinians, to take their land systematically, to make life so difficult for them that they have no option but to disappear. This government lost all respect in the world. For the first time in the United States, I heard people criticize Israel who would never say a bad word about even the Netanyahu government. So I think it changed all of us, and I don't believe that we're going to go back to normal.
Right, but Mr. Al-Nasari, Al-Omari, apologies. What needs to be done, though, to translate this public anger into action on the part of political leaders within countries like the United States, who are influenced so heavily by the Zionist lobby?
Well, you know, I think a lot of people have started to see through that influence and to dissect it and to see how the media presents the world to the American people in a biased way, in a pattern of news that have nothing to do with what's happening in reality. I have seen for the first time in the United States even some politicians fidgeting about this unconditional support for this murderous government in Tel Aviv. And I believe that when millions of people stand up and say that they will no longer stand for this murder, horrendous crimes by the Netanyahu government, I think this will have an effect. Next time the Netanyahu government tries something that the way it did this time for the second or third time or a thousand times against the Palestinian people, I think people have a better understanding of the real motives behind this genocidal government in of Netanyahu and his murderous settlers who steal the Palestinian lands for a living. We will never go back, as I said. The Palestinian people in the West Bank will never go back to normal and expect the world to watch what Netanyahu is doing to the Palestinians.
All right, let me bring in Hala Safadi.